Welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I am Chris Austin.
And I'm Luke Parker.
And he is Luke Parker. He's back. I do not have to do Luke again, which is lovely.
I enjoyed Welcome your impression back, last week. I thought it was good.
Yeah. Was it accurate? It was almost there. Welcome, everybody. This is a podcast where we discuss what's showing at the historic Phoenix Cinema in North London. And this week, we are discussing Korean filmmaker Bong Joon-ho's new film, Mickey 17.
Cool. So Mickey 17, directed by Bong Joon-ho, is a darkly comedic sci-fi based on Edward Ashton's novel Mickey 7. The story follows Mickey Barnes, played by Robert Pattinson, an expendable on a colonization mission to the icy planet Niflheim. As part of a mission that uses cloned individuals for hazardous tasks, Mickey's death is expected, but when he's thought to have died in the line of duty, he's mistakenly reprinted. To his surprise, a new version of him, Mickey 18, replaces him aboard the ship. With multiple clones now on board, Mickey 17 finds himself in a direct conflict with Mickey 18, forcing them into an uneasy alliance. As the two attempt to survive in a mission plagued by dangers, including alien creatures, they face a ruthless command determined to eliminate them. Exploring themes of identity, ethics, and survival, Mickey 17 combines suspense, dark humour, and sharp social commentary on the cost of human life in a corporate-driven future. So, Chris, how was this one for you?
Perfect. Thank you, Luke. Well, yeah, it was great fun. It was great
fun. For sure.
Fun.
It was a good time, yeah.
Yeah, it really was. I can't say that it's my favourite Joon-ho, but it's a really fun Joon-ho.
I mean, to be your favourite Joon-ho, like, that's a task in itself.
True. And I'm already flopping because I still haven't seen The Host, for instance. And
oh, yeah. I'm the same. I've seen his big hitters that everyone knows, but, you know, I'm definitely not an expert on his filmography.
Have you seen The Host?
No.
And I know it's going to blow us away because, I mean, uniformly across the board, everyone, you say that to people, they're like, you haven't seen The Host, you know? So, yeah. But what I have seen, yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite Bong Joon-ho movie, but no, I had a really good time. I had a really good time with this.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I mean, I'm the same. I thought it was really funny. I think one thing I will say about it is that it didn't have the cinematic scope that I was expecting. You know, I really wanted to go and see this film in IMAX because I thought, you know, this is going to be quite a big grand sci-fi.
But I think Stefan did.
But I ended up not seeing it in IMAX in the end. And I feel like
same.
That wasn't actually a big issue for me because, you know, it's not like this big grand action epic. There's mm-hmm. great cinematic scenes, don't get me wrong, but I feel like I didn't really lose anything. So
that's a great point, actually. I mean, did they shoot in IMAX?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that I'm not sure of, but
I just feel like from the trailer, you know, from the trailers I did see, it did kind of give off more of a, you know, something of a bit more grander in scope. You know, that's not really to any detriment of the film. I still thought it was a good film.
I see what you mean.
In that sense, it was much more isolated and much more contained.
Very true. Yeah, that's a great point. I actually never thought about that. Yeah, but I totally agree with you. Yeah, I don't think you lose much by watching. I say what in a standard, so, but on a yes, it's you need to see it on as big a screen as mm-hmm. possible, but it doesn't have to be IMAX necessarily.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Cool. So, I mean, so what were your what did you think of the performances, for instance?
Well, just the film in general, I agree with you. I think it was good. It doesn't hold anything up to, like, Memories of Murder or Parasite.
Oh,
Like, the thing is, I almost feel bad making that comparison because they're such different films, but it's inevitable because it's, you know, with it being Joon-ho.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're going into this film expecting it to reach, you know, the heights of tension that you got in those films, in Memories of Murder, in Parasite, like, you are going to be disappointed because it really doesn't. That being said, it's still a really solid, fun, I guess you would call it a blockbuster, you know? So yeah, in that sense, I had a good time.
Yeah, and I feel like it's got all the hallmarks of a Junho movie. I mean, you watch it and you're like, yep, this is definitely the same filmmaker who made Snowpiercer and Okja. It feels of a piece with those movies.
Yeah, yeah. I think the biggest issue that I had with the film is that obviously one of the main concepts is that you have this expendable, this guy who can be reprinted over and over again, and then you end up in the situation where there's multiples of them. But the film becomes so bogged down with other elements of the plot that it doesn't really end up playing with that whole concept at all. Now, and I was thinking about this on the way home from the film, if Mickey 18 and Mickey 17 were basically just two different people, the film would kind of still play out in the same way.
You lost me.
So, if, you know, the whole concept of them being multiples and the whole concept of being able to, like, reprint, that's kind of like the main gimmick of the film, isn't it? But it becomes so bogged down with other elements of the plot. You know, you have like Mark Ruffalo's part and like with all the aliens, that it never really goes far in making use of that element. And what I'm saying is that, you know, you have the multiple Mickey 17 and Mickey 18, but if they weren't multiples, if they were just like two different characters, the film would kind of still play out the same way.
Yes, I see what you mean.
Yeah,
I see what you mean. That's interesting. I didn't really think about that too much, actually. Maybe because, like you said, because there's so much else to focus on. Yeah, I can. Right. And I guess the gimmick is that they're two completely different personalities as well. The sticking point being they are multiples. They just, they are identical. What did you think about Robert Pattinson then, playing essentially two different characters? Yeah.
It was a little bit jarring at first. I think he was good. I think it was a really fun performance.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That kind of, I don't even know how to describe it, that kind of like wimpy, anxious voice that he puts on. It's a little bit hard to get used to. right. But I like it. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think he was great in it. I mean, Robert Pattinson is great in most things now, and he's made, I mean, come on, such interesting choices. He's worked with the most interesting filmmakers, you know. I mean, he's doing it. He's, what a career.
I mean, he's turned his career around, really, and he's made himself into one of the more interesting actors, you know, to keep your eye on these days.
Truly, truly. I mean, what a win for him, honestly. He doesn't blow me away, but he does well in both forms, Mickey 17 and 18. I also thought Naomi Aki, the actress who plays, what's her name? Is it Narsha?
Yeah, yeah.
Really interesting presence on screen. I thought she was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really good. And I think Mark Ruffalo is good. I find him charming and funny, but there is an aspect of his performance that I'm not too sure about, and that is it feels Trumpian. Feels like he's indicating Trump.
I found his performance to be kind of similar to how he acted. Like his performance in Poor Things.
That's exactly what I thought of too. Yeah.
Even like the accent he was putting on and just how exaggerated it was. And it was hilarious.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
he does it.
Absolutely. It's funny. I was talking to Hannah the other day from our film club, and she was looking back at this podcast and looking at the episodes we've done. She was like, first episode, oh, you did Poor Things. And I was like, yeah. She was like, oh, that, love that movie. It's wild. I was like, yeah, you need to see Mickey 17. And I thought, why did I immediately say that? And it's because of the Ruffalo similarities.
Yeah. Yeah, they're actually pretty identical, I think.
But, yeah.
But he was good, and you know, it was pretty hilarious. He was definitely like the probably the funniest character. There were some really great bits of comedy.
Yeah, really good, really good. But again, you know, if he is intimating a Trump impersonation, I'm not too sure that that's necessary. I'm not too sure that's what we need. I get it.
It's like the whole. It's very on the nose, isn't it? It's not subtle in terms of like what they're trying to do.
Right. And you know, trust me, I don't want to see Trump on screen. No one does. We've got enough of that in our daily lives, you know what I mean? And then you know, Toni Collette as his partner in this. She's great. Of course, I mean, how much more praise can we lavish on Toni Collette? Mm-hmm. With her, I'm not too sure about her love of sauces and all of that stuff. I thought that was a little cartoonish.
Yeah, that was a little bit. That was out of a lot of the humor in the film. I think that was a bit of a miss. It doesn't really make any sense. And it was just, I totally agree with you. It was a bit too cartoonish, which is kind of weird to say when you're like, we're just praising Mark Ruffalo, who plays like the most exaggerated character.
Very true.
But again, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I like that as a quirk of a character, but they go so far with it that I'm like, I'm not understanding this. I will say this as well. Now, there was something that really irritated me.
Okay.
And that was, so you've got this actress, Anna Maria Vartolomei. She plays Kai.
What was that character?
Thank you.
That was a big issue I had with the film as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So confusing what their motives were or like what their whole role was.
Yeah.
I almost feel like they definitely cut out a lot of her bits.
Oh, possibly then. Yeah, possibly.
Like her scenes just felt so fractured and unnecessary. It's kind of like they didn't want to get rid of her completely, but.
Yeah, it feels this romantic interest in Mickey 17 feels so shoehorned in, and I don't buy it. I'm not sure. Yeah, thank you. You know, it's like outside of him being Robert Pattinson, I do not get what the attraction is. And she's meant to be this, you know, stunner on the entire ship, and she is this gorgeous woman.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, why Mickey 17? And then there's a point where I think she's willing to sleep with him. But 10 minutes ago, he was like screaming and rolling around with a chunk of vomit on his lip. I mean, I'm not seeing how we get from there to here. And then, I feel like you can cut her out of the story completely and you wouldn't lose anything.
Yeah. That's exactly what I thought as well, yeah.
Yeah, you know, they build her up so much, but come the final third act of the movie, when we have our whole, everyone's got a part to play, and we get into the resolution of the story, she's got jack shit to play. They give her nothing.
She doesn't do anything. And like her motives, at least for me, maybe I just missed something, but her motives and like what side she was lying on was just so blurred and confusing.
Agreed. Okay. Absolutely agreed. Yeah, that was that stuck out to me quite a bit, actually.
Did you like the score for this film?
I'm going to be honest with you. Didn't really notice it. Now, yes, I noticed it because it's quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of moments. There's this lovely montage towards the beginning of the film, right? When he's basically describing his job and the dynamics on the ship in terms of relationships and all of that.
Yeah.
And the whole score there was lovely. It was so operatic and so, it was quite nice. But I didn't really notice it too much. Why? Was it good?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. And I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but the score's by Young J.L.
Mm-hmm.
And he's known for doing the score for Squid Game, and he's also collaborated on a few films with Jun Ho, most notably Parasite.
Interesting.
And I did like it. I thought it was a really good mix of kind of like quite delicate piano, all quite pretty and melodic, and then there were kind of nice moments of things that maybe were a bit more abstract and interesting and a bit more dramatic. So in general, like, I actually really like the score, and I've listened to it all the way through since watching it.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty solid.
Oh, cool. But I might do the same.
I do kind of agree, though, that I didn't really notice it that much during the film. But I've gone back and listened to it, and I think it's some really nice music in there.
Interesting. Well, do you know what? I might just do the same then, because right at the stop, before we started recording, you heard me listening to it. But that was just me trying to think about what song to use for your intro. And I was like, this sounds quite nice. Yeah, so... Yeah, so I might give that a listen, actually, yeah. Mm. What did you think about the... Because there's a tone to this movie that is so quirky.
Yeah.
You know, it's like... it's got this Junho quirkiness, and I guess that's just part of his brand. Because when you think back to, like, even movies like Memories of Murder, that is a straight-up... like drama thriller, and yet he adds all these comical elements to it. You know, I'm thinking of the bar scene where the detectives are all getting flat out drunk and they're trying to discuss the case, and in the background you've got all these shenanigans going on with the guy trying to make out with someone. Do you remember that
bit?
It's like arms and legs flailing. You know, he's got this quirkiness to him that I really like.
It's very recognizable, but it's kind of hard to put into words, isn't it? You know,
right?
It's almost quite fast-paced and quite snappy, and there's quite like an... I don't know if intelligence is the right word, but it's kind of quite like an intelligent humor, just like layered on top of everything. And he does a really good job of blending that kind of humor with really quite... intense drama, which is really hard to do. But yeah, I agree with you. He's got this really unique but noticeable style, and it comes across in this film a lot. Especially, I think this film is just especially heavy on the comedy as well.
Yeah, I think that he's a weirdo, and I love that about him. He's always looking for the humor, even in his most serious films. Yeah, they all carry this comic tone to it, and I really love that. So the fact that, you know, he's gone all out and he's just leaning more towards that in this film,
yeah,
that's great.
What did you think of the aliens?
That was my next question. We are honestly simpatico right now. Yeah. So what were they called? Creepers, right?
Yeah.
It's so interesting because I don't think that they were particularly exciting on a design level. I feel like I've seen this in a million films. Like, close my eyes and I'll just randomly point to one and I'm like, yeah, it could have come from that movie.
They kind of feel, to an extent, like the kind of aliens you'd see on some like low budget Star Trek episode.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Dude, what's going on today? Yeah, Star Trek.
And at first, I don't know, it's just because I was like expecting something a bit... Again, like I said this before, I was expecting something a bit grander. So at first I was like, this design is a little underwhelming. But as the film goes on, like, they do become quite likable and quite cute almost. And I think there was some really great like design and visuals in like the final showdown of the film. I don't want to like spoil it, but there's scenes where there's like crowds and crowds of these little creepers, and it's just quite smart the way they do it. And I think it actually ends up being pretty cool, even if they are, like you said, a little bit uninteresting.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree with you. They serve a function at the end of the day, and they do become so integral to the story in a way that I didn't see coming. And, you know, they even take it so much further, right? Mm-hmm. With the whole voice translator thing. And
yeah.
just having this thing speak back to you and have it trans, it sounds like this deep Russian voice emanating from this massive creature is so weird in and of itself, but I dig it. Yeah,
I don't know why I found that kind of plot device so funny. The fact that they could just like whip up this translator in like 10 minutes. It's just so exaggerated. And again, it feels dumb to say unrealistic because it's a film, because it's just the nature of the film full stop. But, you know, it was a bit of a convenient plot device that I thought was quite funny.
yeah, for sure. And again, and I'm sure that's the point, mm-hmm. right? That's it's meant to be a little ridiculous, but you just go with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Cool. Shall we move on to pairings then?
Yeah, sure. Do you want to go first?
Sure. I mean, this was one of those rare instances where I was like, oh my God, I've thought of like five or six pairings. You know what I mean?
I don't think I've ever had that.
Really? Oh, okay. Dude, I was watching the movie and I was like, it could be this, it could be this, it could be this. Because for me, there was just a plethora of options to choose from. Mm-hmm. And now that actually makes me so curious about what you've gone for, because I'm thinking it's got to be one of these, right?
Okay.
So I went back and forth. Honestly, it actually made it harder having so many to choose from. I thought I would pair it with another Junho movie, because you could pair this with Snowpiercer or Okja and it would make sense.
Yeah.
But I thought, let's not do that. You know, it's already a Junho movie, so let's go with something different. So I went with the movie The Sixth Day. Have you heard of this film?
I don't think I've even heard of it.
From 2000, it's a film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he gets cloned.
Okay.
And then I think him and the clone have to like team up, because there's this whole project involving clones, but there can never be two of them or something like that. If there are, the government agency come and they try and kill you or whatever. So Schwarzenegger and the clone have to team up against this evil corporation to save the day, basically. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I haven't seen this film in, I mean, years, maybe since, what, 2000, 2001?
Yeah.
It's directed by Roger Spottiswood, who, he directed a Bond film. I think he directed...
Tomorrow Never Dies,
yes, which we're going to get to in our film club one day.
One day.
one day. So I'll be honest with you, I can barely remember the movie. I don't know if it's good or not. I recently just heard it mentioned on a podcast that I was listening to. Can't remember what it was. I think it was How Did This Get Made, one of my favorite podcasts. And it just, it inserted that film back into my head again. And I thought, you know what? It's Arnold Schwarzenegger. There's something that's going to be inherently silly and ridiculous about it.
Yeah.
But that's this movie, right? So...
Yeah, that sounds like a good pick. Need to check it out. Mine is, again, a little bit generic maybe, but I was watching this film and I thought, you know, the vibe that it gave off was a little, in terms of not just the humor and like the sci-fi setting, even in just like the way it looked, it was all quite clean. For me, it was almost a bit reminiscent of like a Marvel film. And, you know, I know people shit on Marvel and like it's so justified, but one of my favorite films actually of 2023 was a Marvel film. And that's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And I'd pair it with this only because I actually think Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is a better film. In terms of, it has really good humor, especially for a Marvel film, but it has so, so much heart, and it's such emotional drama that I think this film almost tries but fails to deliver. And, you know, like I said, in terms of the vibe of the comedy, I just think it's a good example of something that Mickey 17 is almost trying to be, but it does fail a little bit. And I just think Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is such... I know a lot of people probably don't say this. I think it's such a perfect sci-fi film that just delivers on so many levels. So yeah, that'd be my pairing.
Interesting. So, okay, so so you think that Mickey 17 fails in what? In trying to have heart?
I wouldn't say it fails, but, you know, I don't think it's particularly emotional or impactful. And I don't, if I'm brutally honest, I don't think it's that memorable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I won't be rushing back to watch Mickey 17 again, essentially.
Yeah.
Whereas Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, even though I'm not even that crazy about the first two, I think it's a really beautiful film, which is, you know, an unusual thing for me to say about a Marvel film, but
no, that's great. I really see where you're coming from. And that's, I think, James Gunn, right? Mm-hmm. That's what defines him as a filmmaker, is the slapstick comedy. And then in the very next moment, your heart's being ripped out with all this genuine, like, earned emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 does have it a bit easier because you're kind of working with these characters who you've already, like, got to know.
True.
Kind of had this journey with already. So it's much harder in Mickey 17 coming in with something completely fresh for viewers. You have to do a lot more work for the audience, you know, to kind of reach that same emotional point. So again, maybe it's a bit of a crap comparison to make, but
but it stands. Yeah, no, I think it's valid. I think that's really valid. I remember, I don't know for me if I, to compare them, if I found Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 any better than the first two. I think, do you know what? My preference might even be two.
Okay, no, that's fair. I just love the third one. I like I said, it's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, Marvel film.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that you felt that strongly about it.
I think it's like the only Marvel film I've given 5 stars, actually, just looking back through my
letterbox. Oh, my word. So you wouldn't give the first Avengers 5 stars?
Would you?
God, yeah.
Oh, really?
God, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I loved it.
See, the next best one for me is The Winter Soldier.
Oh, it's so good.
So, yeah, that is great.
So good. And, you know, I was actually speaking to someone at work about this the other day, but it's so annoying how the Russo brothers cannot make a good movie outside of Marvel.
That's true. Haven't they just released
what I mean?
The
Electric State. That's, you know, flopped. And I mean, I don't even want to watch it. I probably will just check
it out.
Yeah,
I'm a little curious, but yeah.
But yeah, there's just, but no, but when they did The Winter Soldier, brilliant. When they did Infinity War and Endgame, amazing. Oh, they
Infinity
nailed
War
it.
As well, man. That's so
good. Come on. Yeah. I think I remember reading somewhere that's the Empire Strikes Back of the Marvel Universe,
yeah,
you know,
that's,
and it's
that's
like,
a good comparison.
Yes,
yeah.
That's great. Yeah. So, but okay, amazing, awesome. Yeah, I love it. I love that. That was none of my...
I'm curious to what your others were as well.
I thought of Moon. Did you ever see the film Moon?
Oh, yeah, with...
what's his name? Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, Sam Rockwell, yeah.
Yes, I thought
Kevin
of
Spacey
that.
As well, yeah.
Kevin Spacey's in it? I don't remember that.
He's like the AI... The
robot. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think. I'm pretty sure he was, yeah.
Yeah, I thought of that. I thought of Edge of Tomorrow, just because of the whole, you know, live, die, repeat element of it. And
how did I not think of Moon? That's such an obvious, like, comparison to make.
You know what's crazy, though? I thought of Moon, and then I hadn't seen it in so long that I looked it up just to get a refresher on the plot. And I was like, ooh, this is like, this doesn't feel similar at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's because there's so much of the film that is just him without there being another him. Mm-hmm. And then when there is, I personally, for the life of me, I can't remember, you know, in terms of similar personalities, how... what's the word? apprehensive is it? How much like tension is there between the two? I can't remember. I remember enjoying it, but
oh, cool, yeah. But I think maybe like that's kind of what I was getting at earlier. You know, Moon is a film that's very much solely about the fact that this guy's a duplicate or this guy's like a clone.
Right.
Whereas Mickey 17 is like, that's not even that big a part of the film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, would you recommend this film?
Yeah, definitely worth a watch. It's a fun time.
100%, yeah. It's almost like, it's not even worth thinking too hard about it. That's how much fun it is, right? Yeah. All right, excellent. Well, cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it, sir.
Yeah, and you.
And, I guess I will see you on the next episode.
See you on the next one.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Go and check out Mickey 17 if you can, preferably at the Phoenix Cinema. Special thanks to the Phoenix Cinema. Our music is by Stefan Krieger. You can find more of his music on stefan-krieger.com, and our episodes are always superbly edited by Noah Anderson. Yeah, go and watch Mickey 17. And you know what? I'm going to meet you at the Phoenix Cinema when you do that. Bye for now.